Back her off!
The Scalby took no notice. This was interesting. It was getting to see whole new stretches of sand it had never seen before, and of course there was the prospect, even the certainty, of a good meal at the end of it all. It had perched on Om's shell. Om stumped along the sand, pausing occasionally to shout at his passenger. Brother had come this way. But here, one of the outcrops of rocks littering the desert like islands in a sea stretched right down to the water's edge. He'd never been able to climb it. The footprints in the sand turned inland towards the deep desert.
Idiot!
Om struggled up the side of a dune, digging his feet in to stop himself slaloming backwards. On the far side of the dune, the tracks became a long groove where Brother must have fallen. Om retracted his legs and tobogganed down it. The tracks veered here. He must have thought that he could walk around the next dune and find the rock again on the other side. Om knew about deserts, and one of the things he knew was that this kind of logical thinking had been previously applied by 1,000 bleached, lost skeletons. Nevertheless, he plodded after the tracks, grateful for the brief shade of the dune now that the sun was sinking. Around the dune, and yes, here they zigzagged awkwardly up a slope about 90 degrees away from where they should be heading. Guaranteed. That was the thing about deserts. They had their own gravity. They sucked you into the centre. Brother crawled forward, Vorbis held unsteadily by one limp arm. He didn't dare stop. His grandmother would hit him again. And there was Master Numrod, too, drifting in and out of vision.
I am really disappointed in you, brother.
Want water.
Water, said Numrod. Trust in the great god,
Brother concentrated. Numrod vanished.
Great god, he said.
Somewhere there was some shade. The desert couldn't go on forever. The sun set fast. For a while, Om knew heat would radiate off the sand and his own shell would store it. But that would soon go, and then there would be the bitterness of a desert night. Stars were already coming on when he found Brother. Vorbis had been dropped a little way away. Om pulled himself level with Brother's ear.
Hey!
There was no sound and no movement. Om butted Brother gently in the head and then looked at the cracked lips. There was a pecking noise behind him. The Scalby was investigating Brother's toes, but its explorations were interrupted when a tortoise jaw closed around its foot.
I told you! Bugger off!
The Scalby gave a burp of panic and tried to fly away, but it was hindered by a determined tortoise hanging onto one leg. Om was bounced along the sand for a few feet before he let go. He tried to spit, but tortoise mouths aren't designed for the job.
I hate all birds, he said to the evening air.
The Scalby watched him reproachfully from the top of a dune. It ruffled its handful of greasy feathers with the air of one who was prepared to wait all night if necessary, as long as it took. Om crawled back to Brother. Well, there was still breathing going on. Water. The god gave it some thought. Smiting the living rock, that was one way. Getting water to flow, no problem. It was just a matter of molecules and vectors. Water had a natural tendency to flow. You just have to see to it that it flowed here instead of there. No problem at all to a god in the peak of condition. How did you tackle it from a tortoise perspective? The tortoise dragged himself to the bottom of the dune and then walked up and down for a few minutes. Finally, he selected a spot and began digging. This wasn't right. It had been fiery hot. Now he was freezing. Brother opened his eyes. Desert stars, brilliant white, looked back at him. His tongue seemed to fill his mouth. Now, what was it?
Water.
He rolled over. There had been voices in his head, and now there were voices outside his head. They were faint, but they were definitely there, echoing quietly over the moonlit sands. Brother crawled painfully towards the foot of the dune. There was a mound there. In fact, there were several mounds. The muffled voice was coming from one of them. He pulled himself closer. There was a hole in the mound. Somewhere far underground, someone was swearing. The words were unclear as they echoed backwards and forwards up the tunnel, but the general effect was unmistakable. Brother flopped down and watched. After a few minutes, there was a movement at the mouth of the hole, and Om emerged, covered with what, if this wasn't a desert, Brother would have called mud.
"Oh, it's you," said the tortoise. "Tear off a bit of your robe and pass it over."
Dreamlike, Brother obeyed.
"Turning round down there," said Om, "is no picnic, let me tell you."
He took the rag in his jaws, backed around carefully, and disappeared down the hole. After a couple of minutes he was back, still dragging the rag. It was soaked. Brother let the liquid dribble into his mouth. It tasted of mud and sand and cheap brown dye, and slightly of tortoise, but he would have drunk a gallon of it. He could have swum in a pool of it. He tore off another strip for Om to take down. When Om re-emerged, Brother was kneeling beside Vorbis.
16 feet down! 16 bloody feet! Shouted Om. Don't waste it on him! Isn't he dead yet?
He's got a fever.
Put him out of our misery!
We're still taking him back to Omnia.
You think we'll get there? No food, no water?
But you found water. Water in the desert.
Nothing miraculous about that, said Om. There's a rainy season near the coast. Flash floods. Wadis. Dried up riverbeds. You get aquifers, he added.
Sounds like a miracle to me, croaked Brother. Just because you can explain it doesn't mean it's not still a miracle.
Well, there's no food down there, take it from me, said Om. Nothing to eat. Nothing in the sea, if we can find the sea again. I know the desert. Rocky ridges you have to go round, everything turning you out of your path, dunes that move in the night, lions, other things, gods.
What do you want to do then? Said Brother. You said better alive than dead. You want to go back to Ifeeb? We'll be popular there, you think?
Om was silent. Brother nodded.
Fetch more water, then.
It was better travelling at night, with Vorbis over one shoulder and Om under one arm. At this time of year, the glow in the sky over there is the Aurora Borealis, the hub lights where the magical field of the Discworld constantly discharges itself among the peaks of the Cori Celesti, the central mountain. And at this time of year the sun rises over the desert in Ifeeb and over the sea in Omnia, so keep the hub lights on the left and the sunset globe behind you.
Did you ever go to Cori Celesti? Said Brother.
Om, who had been nodding off in the cold, woke up with a start.
Eh?
It's where the gods live.
Oh, I could tell you stories, said Om darkly.
What?
Think they're so bloody elite.
You didn't live up there, then?
No. Got to be a thunder god or something. Got to have a whole parcel of worshippers to live on Nob Hill. Got to be an anthropomorphic personification. One of them things.
Not just a great god, then?
Well, this was the desert, and Brother was going to die.
May as well tell you, muttered Om. It's not as though we're going to survive. See, every god's a great god to someone. I never wanted to be that great. A handful of tribes, city or two. It's not much to ask, is it?
There's 2 million people in the Empire, said Brother.
Yeah, pretty good, eh? Started off with nothing but a shepherd hearing voices in his head. Ended up with 2 million people.
But you never did anything with them, said Brother.
Like what?
Well, tell them not to kill one another, that sort of thing.
Never really given it much thought. Why should I tell them that?
Brother sought for something that would appeal to God's psychology.
Well, if people didn't kill one another, there'd be more people to believe in you, he suggested.
It's a point, Om conceded. Interesting point. Sneaky.
Brother walked along in silence. There was a glimmer of frost on the dunes.
Have you ever heard, he said, of ethics?
Somewhere in Hawanderland, isn't it?
The Ephebians are very interested in it.
Probably thinking about invading.
They seem to think about it a lot.
Long-term strategy, maybe.
I don't think it's a place, though. It's more to do with how people live.
What, lolling around all day while slaves do the real work? Take it from me, whenever you see a bunch of buggers puttering around talking about truth and beauty and the best way of attacking ethics, you can bet your sandals it's because dozens of other poor buggers are doing all the real work around the place while those fellows are living like...
Gods, said Brother.
There was a terrible silence.
I was going to say kings, said Om, reproachfully. They sound a bit like gods. Kings, said Om emphatically.
Why do people need gods? Brother persisted.
Oh, you've got to have gods, said Om in a hearty, no-nonsense voice.
But it's gods that need people, said Brother, to do the believing, you said.
Om hesitated.
Well, okay, he said, but people have got to believe in something, yeah? I mean, why else does it thunder?
Thunder, said Brother, his eyes glazing slightly.
I don't... is caused by clouds banging together. After the lightning stroke, there is a hole in the air, and thus the sound is engendered by the clouds rushing to fill the hole and colliding, in accordance with strict cumulodynamic principles.
Your voice goes funny when you're quoting, said Om. What does engendered mean?
I don't know. No one showed me a dictionary.
Anyway, that's just an explanation, said Om. It's not a reason.
My grandmother said thunder was caused by the great god Om taking his sandals off, said Brother. She was in a funny mood that day. Nearly smiled.
Metaphorically accurate, said Om, but I never did thundering. Demarcation, see? Bloody I've got a big hammer blind Eo up on Knob Hill does all the thundering.
I thought you said there were hundreds of thunder gods, said Brother.
Yeah, and he's all of them. Rationalisation. A couple of tribes join up. They've both got thunder gods, right? And the gods kind of run together. You know how amoebas split?
No.
Well, it's like that, only the other way.
I still don't see how one god can be 100 thunder gods. They all look different.
False noses.
What?
And different voices. I happen to know Io's got 70 different hammers. Not common knowledge, that. And it's just the same with mother goddesses. There's only one of them. She just got a lot of wigs. And of course, it's amazing what you can do with a padded bra.
There was absolute silence in the desert. The stars, smeared slightly by high-altitude moisture, were tiny, motionless rosettes. Away towards what the church called the top pole, and which Brother was coming to think of as the hub, the sky flickered. Brother put Om down and laid Vorbis on the sand. Absolute silence. Nothing for miles, except what he had brought with him. This must have been how the prophets felt when they went into the desert to find... whatever it was they found, and talk to... whoever they talked to. He heard Om, slightly peevish, say,
"People have got to believe in something. Might as well be gods." "What else is there?"
Brother laughed.
"You know," he said, "I don't think I believe in anything anymore. Except me."
"Oh, I know you exist," said Brother. He felt Om relax a little. "There's something about tortoises. Tortoises I can believe in. They seem to have a lot of existence in one place. It's gods in general I'm having difficulty with."
"Look, if people stop believing in gods, they'll believe in anything," said Om. "They'll believe in young Ern's steam ball. Anything at all."
"Oh." A green glow in the sky indicated that the light of dawn was chasing frantically after its sun. Vorbis groaned. "I don't know why he won't wake up," said Brother. "I can't find any broken bones."
"How do you know?"
"One of the Ephebian scrolls was all about bones. Can't you do anything for him?"
"Why?"
"You're a god."
"Well, yes. If I was strong enough, I could probably strike him with lightning."
"I thought Eeyore did the lightning."
"No, just the thunder. You're allowed to do as much lightning as you like, but you have to contract for the thundering."
Now the horizon was a broad golden band.
"How about rain?" said Brother. "How about something useful?"
A line of silver appeared at the bottom of the gold. Sunlight was racing towards Brother.
"That was a very hurtful remark," said the tortoise. "A remark calculated to wound."
In the rapidly growing light, Brother saw one of the rock islands a little way off. Its sand-blasted pillars offered nothing but shade. But shade, always available in large quantities in the depths of the citadel, was now in short supply here.
"Caves?" said Brother. "Snakes.
But still caves.
In conjunction with snakes."
"Poisonous snakes?"
"Guess."
The unnamed boat clipped along gently, the wind filling Urn's robe attached to a mast made out of bits of the sphere's framework bound together with Simon's sandal thongs.
"I think I know what went wrong," said Urn. "A mere overspeed problem."
"Overspeed? We left the water," said Simony.
"It needs some sort of governor device," said Urn, scratching a design on the side of the boat. "Something that had opened the valve if there was too much steam. I think I could do something with a pair of revolving balls."
That's funny you should say that," said Didactylos. "When I felt us leave the water and the sphere exploded, I distinctly felt my..."
"That bloody thing nearly killed us," said Simony.
"So the next one will be better," said Urn cheerfully. He scanned the distant coastline. "Why don't we land somewhere along here?" he said.
"The desert coast?" said Simony. "What for? Nothing to eat, nothing to drink, easy to lose your way. Omnia's the only destination in this wind. We can land this side of the city. I know people, and those people know people. All across Omnia there's people who know people. People who believe in the turtle."
"You know, I never meant for people to believe in the turtle," said Didactylos unhappily. "It's just a big turtle. It just exists. Things just happen that way. I don't think the turtle gives a damn. I just thought it might be a good idea to write things down and explain things a bit.
People sat up all night on guard while other people made copies," said Simony, ignoring him, "passing them from hand to hand, everyone making a copy and passing it on, like a fire spreading underground."
"Would this be lots of copies?" said Didactylos cautiously.
"Hundreds, thousands.
I suppose it's too late to ask for,
a 5% royalty?" said Didactylos, looking hopeful for a moment.
"No, probably out of the question. I expect,
no, forget I even asked."
A few flying fish zipped out of the waves, pursued by a dolphin.
"I can't help feeling a bit sorry for that young brother," said Didactylos. "Priests are expendable," said Simony. "There's too many of them."
"He had all our books," said Urn.
"He'll probably float with all that knowledge in him," said Didactylos. "He was mad anyway," said Simony. "I saw him whispering to that tortoise."
"I wish we still had it. There's good eating on one of those things," said Didactylos.
It wasn't much of a cave, just a deep hollow carved by the endless desert winds, and a long time ago even by water. But it was enough. Brother knelt on the stony floor and raised the rock over his head. There was a buzzing in his ears, and his eyeballs felt as though they were set in sand. No water since sunset and no food for 100 years. He had to do it.
"I'm sorry," he said, and brought the rock down.
The snake had been watching him intently, but in its early morning torpor it was too slow to dodge. The cracking noise was a sound that Brother knew his conscience would replay to him over and over again.
"Good," said Om beside him. "Now skin it and don't waste the juice. Save the skin too."
"I didn't want to do it," said Brother.
"Look at it this way," said Om. "If you'd walked in the cave without me to warn you, you'd be lying on the floor now with a foot the size of a wardrobe. Do unto others before they do unto you."
"It's not even a very big snake," said Brother.
"And then, while you're writhing there in indescribable agony, you imagine all the things you would have done to that damn snake if you'd got to it first," said Om. "Well, your wish has been granted. Don't give any to Vorbis," he added.
"He's running a bad fever. He keeps muttering."
"Do you really think you'll get him back to the Citadel and they'll believe you?" said Om.
"Brother Nomrod always said I was very truthful," said Brother.
He smashed the rock on the cave wall to create a crude cutting edge and gingerly started dismembering the snake.
"Anyway, there isn't anything else I can do. I couldn't just leave him."
"Yes, you could," said Om.
"To die in the desert?"
"Yes, it's easy. Much easier than not leaving him to die in the desert."
"No.
This is how they do things in Essex, is it?"
said Om sarcastically.
"I don't know. It's how I'm doing it."
The unnamed boat bobbed in a gully between the rocks. There was a low cliff beyond the beach. Simony climbed back down it to where the philosophers were huddling out of the wind.
"I know this area," he said. "We're a few miles from the village where a friend lives. All we have to do is wait till nightfall."
"Why are you doing all this?" said Erne. "I mean, what's the point?"
"Have you ever heard of a country called Estancia?" said Simony. "It wasn't very big. It had nothing anyone wanted. It was just a place for people to live."
"Omnia conquered it 15 years ago," said Didactylos.
"That's right. My country," said Simony. "I was just a kid then, but I won't forget, nor will others. There's lots of people with a reason to hate the church."
"I saw you standing close to Vorbis," said Erne. "I thought you were protecting him."
"Oh, I was, said Simony. "I don't want anyone to kill him before I do."
Didactylos wrapped his toga around himself and shivered. The sun was riveted to the copper dome of the sky. Brother dozed in the cave. In his own corner, Vorbis tossed and turned. Om sat waiting in the cave mouth. Waited expectantly, waited in dread. And they came. They came out from under scraps of stone and from cracks in the rock. They fountained up from the sand. They distilled out of the wavering sky. The air was filled with their voices, as faint as the whispering of gnats. Om tensed. The language he spoke was not like the language of the high gods. It was hardly language at all. It was a mere modulation of desires and hungers, without nouns and with only a few verbs.
"Want."
Om replied, "Mine." There were thousands of them. He was stronger, yes. He had a believer. But they filled the sky like locusts. The longing poured down on him with the weight of hot lead. The only advantage... was that the small gods had no concept of working together. That was a luxury that came with evolution.
"Want. Mine."
The chittering became a whine.
"But you can have the other one," said Om. "Dull, hard, enclosed, shut in."
"I know," said Om, "but this one, mine."
The psychic shout echoed around the desert. The small gods fled. Except for one. Om was aware that it had not been swarming with the others, but had been hovering gently over a piece of sun-bleached bone. It had said nothing. He turned his attention to it.
"You. Mine."
"I know,"
said the small god. It knew speech, real god speech, although it talked as though every word had been winched from the pit of memory.
"Who are you?" said Om.
The small god stirred.
"There was a city once," said the small god. "Not just a city, an empire of cities. I remember there were canals and gardens. There was a lake. They had floating gardens on the lake, I recall. And there were temples, such temples as you may dream of, great pyramid temples that reached to the sky. Thousands were sacrificed to the greater glory."
Om felt sick. This wasn't just a small god. This was a small god who hadn't always been small.
"Who were you?"
"And there were temples. I'm me. Such temples as you may dream of. Great pyramid temples that reach to the sky. The glory of thousands was sacrificed. Me to the greater glory. And there were temples. Me. 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 Greater glory. Such glory temples as you may dream of. Great pyramid dream temples that reach to the sky. Me. Me, sacrificed, dream. Thousands were sacrificed to me, the greater sky glory."
"You were their god," Om managed.
"Thousands were sacrificed to the greater glory."
"Can you hear me?"
"Thousands sacrificed greater glory. Me, me, me."
"What was your name?" shouted Om.
"Name?"
A hot wind blew over the desert, shifting a few grains of sand. The echo of a lost god blew away, tumbling over and over until it vanished among the rocks.
"Who were you?"
There was no answer. That's what happens, Om thought. Being a small god was bad, except at the time you hardly knew that it was bad because you only barely knew anything at all. But all the time there was something which was just possibly the germ of hope, the knowledge and belief that one day you might be more than you were now. But how much worse to have been a god, and now to be no more than a smoky bundle of memories, blown back and forth across the sand, made from the crumbled stones of your temples. Om turned around, and on stumpy legs, walked purposefully back into the cave until he came to Brother's head, which he butted.
Just checking you're still alive.
Right. Om staggered back to his guard position at the mouth of the cave. There were said to be oases in the desert, but they were never in the same place twice. The desert wasn't mappable. It ate map makers. So did the lions. Om could remember them. Scrawny things. Not like the lions of the Hawandaland veldt. More wolf than lion. More hyena than either. Not brave, but with a kind of vicious, rangy cowardice that was much more dangerous. Lions. Oh, dear. He had to find lions. Lions drank